All right. Well, first of all, thank you all for joining us, and we may have more joining us any minute now. So, anyway, welcome to the September edition of the DMSC Masterclass. This masterclass is for current DMSC students and faculty and those interested in the DMSC program at the Arizona School of Health Sciences at A.T. Still University. This allows for us to hear from inspiring masters in the PA profession and those in healthcare who have made a difference. So, a few housekeeping issues. Please keep your microphones on mute. Make comments in the chat session if you have any comments during the discussion. Once we're finished, we will open it up to questions and you can unmute yourself. So, anyway, it's really great to have with us tonight Dr. Michael Nowak. Dr. Nowak has an impressive educational background, including a Bachelor of Science in Medical Technology from the University of Buffalo, a BS in Cytotechnology from Upstate Medical University, a Master's in PA Sciences from St. Francis University, and a Doctor of Medical Science from the Medical School at Lincoln Memorial University. Dr. Nowak truly enjoys PA education and has earned the title of associate professor while teaching full-time at South College. With his passion for medical education, he founded and is the director of Certified Medical Educators, a national PA organization focused on providing high-quality, comprehensive PANTS and PANRI board reviews at an affordable cost. We'll talk more about that in a minute. Over the last 20 years, Dr. Nowak has delivered over 5,000 live medical lectures and helped over this astounding number of 50,000 PA students and PAs who he's helped succeed with their national certifying exam. Additionally, he's involved in different medical organizations, has received various awards for his contributions, and has spoken at numerous conferences around the country. Of interest, Dr. Nowak was one of our first professors in our DMSC program, where he taught our Social Determinants of Health course. Dr. Nowak's dedication to patient care extends beyond his work in the classroom. Throughout his clinical career as a PA, he has gained extensive experience in various medical fields, including cardiovascular surgery, family medicine, urgent care, and trauma and general surgery. He has helped thousands of patients, including those at their prestigious Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Dr. Nowak continues to work clinically, and most recently, he and his wife have opened a very affordable family practice clinic in Tennessee called Neighborhood Family Clinic to help all patients, including those without medical care. I hope we hear more about that. Finally, Dr. Nowak's ongoing medical mission work is very commendable. He started and has been organizing a yearly medical mission trip to Guatemala for over a decade. On these trips, he brings PA students and other volunteers to medically underserved areas, providing free medical care in poor Guatemalan mountain villages and communities. So, Mike, welcome to the masterclass.
Thank you so much, Dr. Danielson, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, wonderful. Well, let's get right to it, to the good stuff. So, Mike, after graduating from St. Francis, by the way, I think Bert Simon was your program director, if I'm correct. But you started your career as a clinically practicing PA back in 2002. What drew you to the PA profession? And tell us about your early clinical work.
Sure, be happy to tell you a little bit about that. I started out, before entering PA school. You saw I was attending college as more of a lab tech, a medical technologist. And on the side, I worked as an EMT, a volunteer EMT in the town that I was living in. And through the EMT experience, the volunteer experience through the fire hall in transporting patients, I had met my very first PA who worked in the emergency room. And I'll never forget that day. She ran a code, and I kind of saw her badge that said PA, and I remember asking somebody about it. And then afterwards, I talked to her a little bit about the profession. It's something I had never heard before. And that was the moment that I knew that the PA profession was something I was going to be interested in. I had applied to a few schools, and at that time, The master's degree was just actually starting out. Most of the programs that were PA were actually bachelor degrees in the country. And as you saw, I had two bachelor's degrees already, so I kind of geared myself more towards a program that was starting out with the master's, and I ended up picking St. Francis University in Loretto, Pennsylvania, where you're correct, Dr. Bert Simon was the program director, and it was an amazing experience, and I'm so glad I got to have him as part of my education. While I was at St. Francis in my clinical year, I'll never forget my first rotation was general surgery, and it's always very scary for all of us to do our general surgery rotation, when you're just out of your didactic year. And one day I got teamed up with a cardiac surgery PA, and another day that I will never forget in my life. And to see the professional relationship of how the cardiac surgery PA worked with the surgeon and with the operating room team was truly amazing. And I knew that my last rotation, which was going to be my elective, I wanted it to be set up in cardiac surgery. And I got to do that at a great hospital in Pennsylvania, Geisinger Medical Center, in Danville, Pennsylvania, there, where a lot of great PAs have come from or work there, including Dr. Ken Harbert, who we talked about a little bit before this program started, and I guess he's been one of your guests already, as well as a number of other PAs. So after my rotation in cardiac surgery, which I truly fell in love with, I started out my profession working in cardiac surgery. My first job was actually South Bend, Indiana, and I worked 80 hours a week, and it was a different time where, I tell students today, it was filet-o-leg, where you took the scalpel and you opened up from the ankle all the way up to the thigh, and that's how you would take out the saphenous vein, and then you'd literally have to put in 2,000 sutures or staples. Something that fast forward only, 10, 15 years is almost unheard of in today's world. But that's how I started out my career. And a couple years later, I got recruited out to the Minnesota, Wisconsin area, where I ended up working at the Mayo Clinic that you mentioned in Rochester, Minnesota, still in cardiothoracic surgery. But I've always done a little bit of primary care or urgent care on the side, probably because I needed to pay off my student loans like most students need to do. But I've always been a blend of kind of a hospital surgical PA as well as a primary care PA in some capacity.
Oh, that's wonderful. I really like the fact that you shared about your two experiences, with PAs, both before you went to PA school and during. I mean, we all have stories like that, and that's the best part of the profession. Mike, how did you initially become interested in PA education? And then past that, what prompted you in creating Certified Medical Educators, the company, which we talked about has been really successful in preparing PAs for pants and PANRI for 2 decades.
I think I've always had an interest in education. Even when I was in PA school, some people gravitate to knowing they may have an interest in one area or another. And I like didactic education. I felt there's a kind of a connection, a chemistry between myself and PA education. And I was only out of school probably a year or so when I got asked to give a few lectures at local PA programs, and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed putting together the lectures and connecting with the students and kind of sharing experiences that they could be growing into. And then that grew into where you start lecturing at some of your state level conferences or specialty organization conferences. And even at one point, I got invited to come back to St. Francis in Pennsylvania, and they asked me to give all the cardiology lectures, and I'll never forget, I gave all 16 hours of cardiology in 2 days, 2 8-hour days back to back, true story with that. And then while I was working at Mayo Clinic, The shifts were very unique, and it's something that we don't see as much today as we used to. But I actually did 24-hour shifts at Mayo Clinic, and that's something that allowed you to have some free time off because you're working two or three shifts a week. And everyone at Mayo had a second job. Some people worked urgent cares, emergency rooms. One guy I'll never forget, he even was a truck driver, and he would drive, over state lines, and he made it work for many, many, many years with that. Well, it was during my time working at Mayo that my first recertification came up, and another history lesson. That's when we had to recertify every 6 years, right? And I started planning my studies again, as many of us do, kind of late in the fifth year, or early in the fifth year. And with that, I started to see what were the resources out there for us as PAs. And there's lots of resources today that never really existed 20 years ago in our profession. And when I was going through that process, I came up with the idea of me utilizing my free time off when I was working at Mayo Clinic to spend it focusing on something that I was passionate about, education. And I had developed at that time, and I still teach today as part of this 3-day Pants and Pannery board review company. At the time, there weren't many resources or board review companies out there. And I came up with a unique concept to give a high quality program in a 3-day time frame and be the first one in the nation to offer 100% guarantee, something that had never been done before. So I was very passionate about the work that I was putting into it, and I wanted it to really show and come across. And as you mentioned, yeah, it's hard to believe, but in the many years of doing this, we have helped now over 50,000 PAs and PA students, graduate. And that's something I'm very happy about. And if I, was to be taken off this planet tomorrow, I feel good that I was able to help people and succeed. And some of those stories will have a trickle-down effect to their preceptors and other students that they're going to be precepting in the future years with that to come. And throughout my board review conferences, at one point we were getting up to 30 conferences a year. There was a program director that sat in one of my conferences in Nashville, who ended up coming to me afterwards and kind of tapped me on the shoulder and invited me to start teaching at a PA program here in Tennessee. So another gentleman who is well known in the PA industry, Dr. Ken Harbert, was that gentleman. And it was through that connection in the Board Review Conference that he invited me to come out to the Knoxville area. And my wife and I had moved down in 2015, and we have since remained here in the Tennessee area.
Wow. Well, Mike, you'll remember I used to teach for, I don't know, 10 or 12 years at the AAPA conference on how to prepare for the pants and pannery. And many times you would show up there and help answer questions. And I've heard you lecture, and it comes to you. I think it's innate in your personality because you do a wonderful job. And I've been to your courses, and thanks for all that you do and have done for so many PAs out there. That sort of gets to the question that I ask every guest that we have here, because and that is, who's inspired you in your life and your career? Who's that person or persons, that has really made a difference for you to be where you're at?
If I think about that, of course there's the personal side of who I'd have to probably say, well, if I didn't say my wife right now, I don't I'm not sure if how long I'll continue to remain married. So I guess I better start out by saying my wife has
Yes.
truly inspired me. But besides my wife, my parents, I was not blessed with a silver spoon by any means growing up. And we were lucky enough to have a black and white television growing up and no vehicle whatsoever. But I had a wonderful childhood and I have no regrets whatsoever. And looking at my parents who were hardworking and always kind of inspired me to do well in school, is someone, the people who I would say most close to me as a young child, who helped shape me to the person that I became. And then, starting out in college, I'll admit it, I had to work two or three jobs to pay the bills, no matter what the bills were. And one of my jobs was a phlebotomist, and it's a skill that I'm so proud to have today, which I'll talk to you a little bit about later on. But all these little things of working as an EMT in the volunteer fire department, and working as a phlebotomist, or working for my dad who was a butcher, or working in the bakery, or having the paper out, or whatever it was, helped shape me to the person that I've turned out to be. Professionally, worldly, I would say I always kind of looked up to now Saint John Paul II, who was a pope. I'm blessed to be nearly 100% Polish. I did the 23andMe genetic testing a few years ago, and I have proof that I am like 99.6% Polish. I actually have a piece of paper. My parents, especially my mom, always told me I was 100% Polish. And when you're a kid, you're like, yo, there's got to be that one Irish or Italian in the family or something way back when. And come to find out years later, I get a genetic test and it is almost 100%. So knowing I grew up in a Polish culture as a child, I always kind of probably looked up to the Pope at that point for all the good that he was doing in the world to help people. Fast forward now, regarding our professional PA career, people like yourself, Dr. Danielson, and I mean this wholeheartedly. You and I have had amazing conversations. How, when you started out, it truly was a certificate degree or barely an associate's degree for our profession. And people like yourself have helped it grow to not only the bachelor's and the master's, and now, I'm sure we'll talk about the doctorate program coming up here. But my program directors and other great people, there's just been a lot of people that I've been blessed to have connected with by whatever stars that have aligned through the years. And these are the mentors, people like yourself, people like Ken Harbert, people like Dr. Michael Huckabee, and others throughout the country. So as part of the board review and having traveled, I've got to meet lots of people, and I'm really have been blessed to have meet so many good people like yourself.
Well, thanks, Mike. And I think you'll agree, we all get the opportunity to stand on the shoulders of giants, and whether it's a personal or a professional life. So thank you for that. Well, you brought it up, but let's you went on to earn your after doing all this other stuff to earn your Doctor of Medical Science there in Tennessee. Why did you do that?
Well, at the time I was, teaching not only full time in the PA program, but doing the National Board Review conferences. And education truly is a passion of mine. And looking back, just briefly talking about the history of some of the educational degrees, historically, like yourself, who have people who have a PhD, that was one of the only degrees that had existed many, many years ago. And then the EdD kind of came out of that. And when I was in PA school, Bert Simon and a couple others had signed up and were getting their doctorate through one of the newest at that time, the Doctorate of Health Science degree. And that was something that I noticed PA leaders and educators throughout the country had started, because it was a new profession at that time, a degree for our profession. And then fast forward years later, this idea of the Doctor of Medical Science degree started to grow. And with me teaching, it seemed to be a great blend to get an additional a knowledge base to help you. And I'm very proud to have gone to a program that actually had a subspecialty in medical education. In today's world of Doctor of Medical Science degrees, there are many programs across the country that have different flavors. And these different flavors may be more in leadership or academics, or there's a whole variety of different flavors that are starting to grow. Well, for me, I thought it was a great blend of matching my passion of medical education with that ongoing Doctor of Medical Science degree. And in my area here, not too far north, Lincoln Memorial University was interestingly one of was the first program to get accredited, not the first program to graduate the first class, but the first program to get accredited in the nation. And they did have this medical education kind of subsets, which I signed up for. And at that time, it was a 2-year rigorous degree that was taught by physicians at the medical school to help push us PAs to be leaders and to practice medicine and to teach medicine at a little bit of a higher level thinking, critical thinking. And they wanted us to be more like the residents or more like the fellows when you're working with students or working in hospital systems or in clinics. So for me, I thought it was the perfect blend at that time.
That's great. And actually, you bring up another important topic that leads to the next question. And that is, what are the most important attributes of successful leaders today? And as a successful leader yourself, how do you keep your team motivated despite conflicts and obstacles, both in healthcare and in life?
You know, when I think about successful leaders, the first thing that comes to mind is something that we probably do not see on the surface. These individuals are usually very passionate about their degree, whatever they're into, whether it's, science or medicine or history or whatever it is. I feel truly successful leaders have something inside them that has helped them get to that level to where they are. In today's world, I feel proper communication is most important. As you know, working in any PA program or dean of a college or any doctor of medical science, professors have to communicate effectively. We have to have a higher level of communication that I think that didn't exist as much, 30 or 40 years ago, where today, it's more important to have that proper communication and frequent communication. And it's wonderful with social media, and we have literally computers at our in our pockets that we can connect via texting. And I even remember, giving my phone number out to your students in your DMS program, and they would call on the weekends or text. Because we all have different hours working clinically or in the hospital or teaching, and it's great to get that kind of communication where way back when there seemed to be a little bit more of a barrier I felt in some of the higher institutions. And I really do feel that proper communication, frequent communication really helps to break down those barriers and helps people become better leaders with experience.
Great, great. Well, Mike, talk to us now about your commitment to medical missions and your yearly trip to Guatemala, where you're taking colleagues and PA students to medically underserved areas. I mean, you've been doing that, I don't know, for a lot of years now. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is an amazing story. It was at an AAPA conference many years ago, about 13 years ago now, that I'll never forget. They had a breakout session on global health. And I said, oh, I'm going to see what this breakout session is in the evening. It was in a little hotel room. And I remember showing up there, and there were only five or six people. And the speaker was a PA who had done some medical mission work overseas in Africa and had a wonderful PowerPoint and showed pictures. And I really became interested with hearing about this because up to that point, I had not heard much. When I was in PA school 20 years ago, that really was not an option at all. And at that AAPA conference, I became very interested. And even though it was a very small group, after that, I started to do some more homework and I learned some interesting things. And one of the bigger national groups at that time, Doctors Without Borders, was actually a group that was not as receptive to PAs as compared to some other groups. And even though they were probably one of the biggest national organizations, worldwide organizations, I felt a little discouraged that PAs were not being inclusive as part of that. And in doing more homework, I ended up getting connected with an American family who lives in Guatemala. Again, the stars aligned through a PA student who had spent some time in Guatemala, and she kind of connected us. And I just kind of took it upon myself to then set up this small group of PA students or other volunteers, anyone who was interested in going down with me. And this American family has helped us coordinate going into different mountain villages called aldeas in Guatemala, a community called Jalapa, Guatemala. And for now, the last 12 years, I've been taking students at least once, if not twice a year, or anyone who's interested in going. And we have been able to do a lot of great things in even the small time when we're there. We usually go for a week-long period, and we'll take about 20 individuals with us. And at the end of the week, we usually see anywhere from 800 to 1,000 patients. So it's not a vacation, but rather we set up primary care clinics in these mountain villages. They usually have no running water, no electricity, but they have a wonderful sense of community. And I love talking to students to say, listen, for thousands of years on this planet, this is how we've existed. Not with the awesome technology and electricity that we've had for barely only 100 years, which is kind of amazing when you think about it. And, in 1900 was, in my opinion, when medicine really took off. Because up to that point, we didn't have a lot of the basic research or the basic technology that really all started in the year 1900. I mean, electricity started around 1900. Vaccine started around 1900. ABO blood typing started in 1900. X-rays started around that time or shortly after. And then even antibiotics, the first antibiotic wasn't even used until 1942, which is World War II. I mean, not that long ago when you think about. So when we go into these mountain villages and we have tools today that never existed, and we're able to help people with blood pressure issues or diabetes or urinary tract infections, or every once in a while, surprise, you're pregnant. These things really have broadened my spectrum of medicine and education, because when you can help to train PA students or other pre-PA students or others interested in medicine in an environment like that, they will walk away with an experience that will have that trickle-down effect for many, many others throughout their career. So this year will be our 12th year going to Guatemala, and I'm very glad to say that my wife and my 12-year-old daughter will be joining us, and I'm excited for my daughter to see something that is not the United States of America. So see that iPads are not needed, all the time. And that how kids can enjoy themselves playing soccer for hours, and they have a wonderful sense of community. So it's a passion of mine that has grown as part of me being a PA, and I look forward to many years of continuing to do that.
Well, that's wonderful, and thank you for doing that. Do you mind if I share your email with our viewers, somebody who may want to go or contribute to going with you?
Absolutely, you can share it with anyone. Our website, Certified Medical Educators, has a page devoted directly to that medical mission trip, and it talks about things about it. I can honestly say it's a safe trip. I would never be taking my 12-year-old daughter if it wasn't safe. We go to a place called Jalapa, Guatemala, which is about 3 hours east of Guatemala City. It's a very rural part of the country, and it doesn't have any of the bad stuff that we would need to worry about.
Great. I'll put a link to your website on this as well. So
Thank you.
great. Well, let's move on to some professional politics. What are some of the most current hot topics regarding our PA profession?
Oh, it's interesting. In just 20 years of me being a PA, there have already been many changes that we've seen. I kind of alluded to our profession historically was always recertifying every 6 years. And then the NCCPA helped change that a number of years ago to now we have every 10-year, recertification. We now have some options for some certificates of added qualifications, your CAQs, where PAs who work in specialties can now get merit badges, as some people like to say, when they work in those specialties, and they can get a special acknowledgments for all the hard work that they've done, whether it's been in psychiatry or even, cardiothoracic surgery. I'm very glad to have been in that first group of the CAQs with NCCPA to have earned my cardiac surgery CAQ. And I can tell you and everyone who's interested in that, it is an extremely challenging test, and it's not easy. I would say it's probably 5 times harder than the actual pants, and the pants is not easy all by itself, but it does make you feel good when you work in that specialty and you're able to get a little something that shows you've done great things for all the work you've done with patients in there. And then, fast forward, other hot topics today will include, PAs that can open up their own clinic. You mentioned in the introduction that just recently, my wife and I, about a year ago, and this really kind of comes from the Guatemala experiences of providing free medical care to people. My wife and I got together, and here in Tennessee, I like to say we opened up a nearly free clinic, something called the Neighborhood Family Clinic. And I have a little experience because when I worked at the Mayo Clinic up north, on the side, when I was doing some family practice, one of the docs opened up a direct patient care model that does not accept insurance, but has very inexpensive cost. Our labs are about $20 each. Our visits are about $49 each. And this is a great way to give back to help people who don't have insurance. There's so many people in our area here in Eastern Tennessee who either don't have insurance, or people who do have insurance, deductibles continue to go up and up and up every year. And some people have 5,000. My neighbor next door has like an $11,000 deductible. And if people are relatively healthy, only going in once or twice a year for small things, it can be overwhelming to get these $600, $700 bills sometimes when they do lab workups. So my wife and I are giving back to the world now, not only with education, because we still train PAs, they just are doing their clinical rotations with us. So it's great to have a PA student with you for 4 weeks or 5 weeks or 6 weeks, however long they are, to get back to the roots of medicine, to get back to the basics. We actually do paper charting, something old school that I know you'll remember, Dr. Danielson, but most of the students today have never done. And I like paper charting because it allows you to connect eye to eye with the patient and not be on the computer as much as many providers often have to be with the electronic medical records. So, many nurse practitioners and/or PAs are starting to do this of opening up clinics. We have great relationships with the physicians that we work with, as well as, MAs and other providers and staff. So I think, that definitely is a newer, hotter topic that never existed when I was in PA school 20 years ago. And that kind of also opens up to something that is a hot topic of OTP, optimal team practice. AAPA first kind of introduced this as part of the House of Representatives and helped it get passed, and has really done great education with the state chapters to help get the word out. And our relationship with our physicians and our other medical providers, nurse practitioners, and MAs and nurses has significantly grown a lot with that. I believe your state is one of the states that's actively working, and I know you have done amazing things with your state, and you've been actively involved with OTP. So I always look forward to catching up with you to learn more of the things that you are doing in your state and others are doing in their state. And I think that is a growth that we're going to see a lot over the next decade to see where that takes us to.
Yeah, great. Well, let's stay on that same path and talk about the name change issue, Dr. Nowak. What do you think about physician associate?
You know, that's interesting because when I was in PA school 20 years ago, I had first heard that, and I could be wrong, correct me, but there were three or four PA programs in the country that were graduating PAs with a degree as a physician associate. And I remember when I first heard that, it was a little bit confusing to see. You know, why was there a little disconnect? Because our profession was, you know, physician assistants, and there was a lot of communication about PAs and the physician assistant profession. And at that point, there were, you know, about 120 schools when I graduated from St. Francis. And fast forward now, there are over 300 PA programs in the country. So I never really knew much of that history of why certain programs and maybe you can open up and talk a little bit about that now. But fast forward, you know, about 15 years ago, it seemed to come to another important social media topic. And, you know, when I was in school, there was no social media 20 years ago. So now it was wonderful to see people around our nation interested in different, you know, possible name changes. And one of the ones that was brought up was definitely a physician associate. Personally speaking, and I know we all may have a different opinion on that, and I respect everyone's opinion regarding this, I have enjoyed the physician associate title, or the change towards it. I do see the other side of the coin where people have different opinions on that, and there's always interesting topics that I see when on different social media outlets regarding it. But I think that the word assistant, can sometimes be confusing where most patients seem to know what a registered nurse is. Most patients seem to know what a medical assistant is. And by knowing those terms very well and not knowing the term physician assistant as well as some other terms, we have been occasionally lumped together as the medical assistants, or there's been some confusion with us. And I think as a whole, we have always done an amazing job educating our patients as to who we are and what we are. And that has helped us grow to where our profession has taken us today. So, you know, the AAPA through different channels was one of the first organizations to take that leap forward. And I believe they have officially changed their name to American Academy of Physician Associates. But they also, in their wisdom, have talked to all of us. And I've looked and I've seen on their website where they encourage us to not use that title in our professional or our legal aspects regarding your state chapters and your licensure and your certificates until those proper channels have been changed. And I foresee that's going to take a while. Things do not move very fast in government and each of our states, it took a while to get our wordage into our licensure and our certification wherever we are. And I know it's going to take quite a while to help get that changed again. But all change happens slowly. Most people don't like change. And I agree, I don't always like change. But in the big picture, where you look from where we started to where we end up, those changes are almost always beneficial. So, I would love to learn if you can tell us briefly about those three or four schools. Was Yale one of them or Oklahoma program, if I remember hearing?
No, you're exactly right. Oklahoma and Yale, and there are probably a couple of others that I've forgotten about, but Yale and Oklahoma were the two, for sure, and they continue to do that. So, yeah, and I think you know you're right. It's going to take a while. We as a profession, unfortunately, in this particular item, are polarized. We have 50%. This is 50% of our colleagues don't want anything to do with the name change, and 50% want us to move forward. Yet at the same time, our professional organization has made that decision, and like you said, we really can't use that until we get the appropriate statutes in the states to say that. But anyway, it's interesting times. But at the end of the day, Mike, and you're in clinical medicine still. At the end of the day, As my first preceptor always said to me, Randy, don't ever forget it's about the patient, and those are the folks that they don't care what we're called. They just care that we take good care of them. So we'll see how that goes. Moving on. So many of our DMSC students are, as you mentioned earlier, either in PA education or they're inspiring educators, or they're interested in leadership administration, moving up into the C-suites or some sort of leadership role, whether it's Mayo Clinic or the VA or the military. They want to find those opportunities, so they want to gain skills to enhance their clinical acumen. So, what would be your advice to our DMSA students and our graduates? By the way, we just had graduation this past Monday, and our third graduation. And I forget the number, Beth, but the total graduating was like 83, I believe. And anyway, what would be your advice to them about the future of the profession?
Well, for starters, I tip my hat off to all the individuals who are interested in, growing their personal and professional aspects of being a PA. This DMSC is an amazing opportunity, and I'm very glad to hear that not only your program but other programs are growing each year. And as I said, there's lots of different flavors of the different programs that you can do, and some of us like vanilla ice cream, and other people prefer chocolate ice cream. And there's nothing wrong. Ice cream is wonderful for most people, as long as you don't have a dairy allergy or a GI issue with it. But that being said, all the students who have gone on to take time out of their lives, from their families, from their clinical, their hospital, professional aspects, from their friends, to devote to continue to go on with their ongoing education is truly amazing. And there are other opportunities besides the DMSC. If you work in, let's say, surgery, trauma, critical care, there's always going to be these little, I call it like small certifications that I'll talk to students that they can go on, things like ATLS or FCCM or FCCS, or sometimes people just are unaware of these branching out opportunities to give more education in ultrasound or in diagnostics or this or that. And I think all of us internally look and we see what are we most interested in, and we kind of gravitate towards those things. For some of your students, it's going to be administration, and they're going to be great deans of colleges like yourself, Dr. Danielson. Or others, it'll be leadership opportunities in the PA program. Maybe there'll be a didactic director or a program director or a clinical director. For others, it'll be more education focused, and they're going to be maybe giving lectures at those national or state conferences. And through those opportunities, they will continue to grow, and they will be our leaders. I look at it, I enjoy being a hybrid of both an educator as well as someone who's passionate about clinical medicine. But for me, that's my mix. It's kind of that 50-50, that you mentioned. It's almost any topic today on social media is 50-50. I always thought to myself, a great book that I could write would be 51-49, because any topic out there is almost a 51-49% or 50-50 split. So they just have to have some internal reflection to figure out what they're most interested in. And don't be scared to reach out to mentors. I feel in this world that many students, and we're all students, it doesn't matter what our age is, but many students are often a little shy or scared to reach out to people. And I open it and I welcome it, and I give out my cell phone to people. And when I teach the board review, I tell them, 3 years from now, if you're looking to move from one state to another state or one specialty to another specialty, and if I know someone that I can help facilitate that, give me a call. Here's my cell phone. Very, very few people, probably like 0.0001%, actually take me up on that. But I would encourage, strongly encourage, that all your students, your DMSC students, Take time and start writing that list of mentors with phone numbers and occasionally reach out. Send them the old school Christmas card once a year or the birthday message on Facebook. I know all these kids are on Snappy Chats and TikToks. They're all cool today. But if you're old like me and if you're on Facebook, those birthday things pop up, right? And it's sometimes wonderful to hear from someone to say, hey, Dr. Danielson, I attended your lecture 2 years ago at AAPA and I really enjoyed it. Oh, and by the way, happy birthday. And when you receive that or I receive something like that, it's not just the words happy birthday, but it's that connection of they're acknowledging how they remember you from the PA class that you taught them or a lab or a clinical rotation or whatever that is. Just this weekend, I still moonlight in the hospital here at the University of Tennessee Medical Center, and I do some general surgery and trauma on the side. And I had the opportunity to run into two former students on the weekend, one of which was in line at Starbucks getting coffee. And I did not recognize her. And as I was walking away, she's like, Dr. Nowak, is that you? And I said, yeah. And I turned around. And she's like, you taught me cardiology a few years ago. And we stopped for 5 minutes and we connected. We got a selfie together. And it made my day. And then later that day, I ended up connecting with another former PA student who's in a different state. And he too said something on the phone that it just brightened my day in a way I'll never forget. He said, I work family practice and I still remember and I practice and I teach the PA students some of the things that you taught me. I remember those things, intricately. And that made me feel great as a member of our PA profession. So that would be my biggest piece of advice to all PAs out there, no matter what you want to do, whether it's leadership, administration, tropical medicine, medical mission trips, whether you want to open your own clinic or that, there are lots of great people out there who can help you. You just need to not get too scared and reach out, and I will be happy for you to share my contact info with all of those people and more.
Great, Mike. Thank you so much. I'm going to sort of open it up for questions, but before we go there, I want to start it off. With all the busy things that you're doing, working in the hospital, running your business, having a clinic, Mike, what do you do for fun?
I'm a workaholic. I'll admit it. Don't get me wrong. I love family time, and family time is precious. As I've gotten a little bit older, I realize, time with family is something. It doesn't matter if it's my daughter and I watching Baby Yoda and Star Wars, and I'm trying to brainwash her about old school Star Wars, and she's like my wife. She's not very interested, but she'll sit on the couch and watch something with me. Or just spending family time is really kind of most important, I feel, for the time off. And I kind of alluded to when I was growing up, a thought that just came in my mind is, I had to work two or three jobs when I was in college just to be able to pay my own college. I was never blessed with having anyone to be able to pay anything towards my college. So I worked extremely hard, including, a full-time job as a phlebotomist and part-time jobs as well. So I think internally, that's always been part of me. And having that hybrid of enjoying, education and working clinically, it's almost kind of hard to have two passions, and it does take a lot of time, right? And I work only 1 week in a month in the hospital, but I do that to help out the team and it's always great to share some of the experiences with students in the hospital, just like the clinic. But right now, at my point in my life, 20 years of being a PA, my niche is this primary care clinic that my wife and I open. We really, truly enjoy being able to help people. It's not about getting patients in and out every 10 minutes in our clinic. We spend time, and there's so many people who need help who just can't afford it. And that's kind of my newest passion. I still educate, but I'm only doing a little bit of the board review. I'm doing now students in the clinical rotations. So that would be it's hard to have a lot of fun time, but I have fun with what I do on a daily basis, so I enjoy that most.
Gotcha. That's wonderful. Well, I'm going to open it up. We have a few minutes left for any questions that anybody has who's joining us today. You just unmute yourself and let me pick on Joe. Joe, I know you're out there walking in the forest somewhere, but feel free to jump in.
I'm done walking, thank goodness, and I survived. So
All
that's a good
right.
thing too. And Mike, my goodness, thank you so much. I've known you for a number of years now, and every time I hear and listen to you and we spend time together talking, my friend, I learn so much more about you. So thank you for your friendship and all the things you've done for the profession. The question I have for you is that it's what is the thing that you haven't done yet that you really want to do? What's that next big thing that's kind of in your heart there, Mike?
Oh, in my heart, something that is interesting in medicine that we don't always learn about as part of Western medicine would be the other half of medicine, which some people call Eastern medicine or functional medicine or holistic medicine. And that is something that I have become a little more interested in the last few years. I'm definitely deep rooted in Western medicine and evidence-based medicine and practicing guidelines, of course. But I have learned through patients and patient experiences that there are a lot of amazing things that happen across our globe that Chinese medicine has existed for thousands of years in acupuncture and herbals and things that we're not as interested. I would love to be able to learn a little bit more to incorporate that into our current practice there. And I'm always very open-minded to learning what patients are interested in and being very open-minded in general, because I think that's extremely important in today's world to not have a bias one way or the other. So other than that, I don't have much in my bucket list. Maybe a little travel. My wife knows that I want to eventually go to Poland. It's not exactly a luxurious trip, but I want to do some ancestry on my great-great-grandparents and some of those grave sites and those old churches. And I would love to go to Rome or Italy, once, but maybe a little bit of travel in my life.
Well, that's great, Mike. I mean, I think you're a passionate guy. You've got so many great things. So I think that's awesome. And Jenny's standing right here, and we looked at each other and we're like, we'd like to go to Poland. So you just let us know when you guys want to go. And your wife is lovely. So if you want some interlopers to hang with you guys, we'd do that.
Absolutely. For all the students out here, I have to tell you this. Last year when we opened up the clinic, which is always a very scary thing when you're branching out on something that you've never done before and you don't know if it's going to work, if it's not going to work. I am extremely proud and happy that Dr. Joe Weber and his wife were able to come out for that ribbon cutting ceremony. And they drove to Eastern Tennessee. And I will never forget that. And I will thank you and your wife forever for that time for supporting me and my wife and a couple other people who were. I know Dr. Danielson, if you live closer, you would have been here as well. But you would have been on the road for many days to get here. So.
Oh, wonderful. Any other questions?
Yes, we have a question from Katie had a question in the chat box for you. What do you think about the Kentucky announcement for the $42 million for Ibogaine research?
Oh, I'll be honest, Katie, thank you for that question. I will be writing that out down and I will be researching it, but I do not know a lot. As Dr. Danielson alluded, I'm pretty busy and I don't really watch television and I barely check my Facebook status once a day. So if it didn't pop up right away, I don't know enough about it. Thank you for sharing that. I promise you when I have some free time, I will research that and I will form an opinion, but I really don't know anything about it right now to share about that. But I'm in Eastern Tennessee, which is just south of Knoxville in a town called Maryville. Most people would say Maryville, but when you live here, you got to say Maryville. You got to try and change that A to a U, and people just say Merval. So I wanted to fit in a little bit. So I do that. Oh, and Katie, you're from Oak Ridge, so you know it's not that far at all. But thank you for that question, and I wish I could answer it a little bit better for you.
Great, thank you. Any last minute questions?
I actually have a question for you, Dr. Nowak. So it's we have a lot of students that come into the program that are looking for a future career down the road or a change in career possibly, and then the doctorate's going to help them in that future self for them for right now. Maybe they've only been practicing for 5 or 10 years as PAs. So what advice would you give them if they're interested in, you know, like you've done with working with underserved populations? And how do you start? I know it's a huge question. How do you start your own clinic? But you kind of your elevator speech for how would you do what you've accomplished?
Well, I think a great start is to connect with smaller community groups that may be already doing some of that. In our area in Eastern Tennessee, Katie, who just asked the question, may know that there is a group that was started through a church and then another organization where they every Wednesday provide free food and medical resources literally under the bridge, and they call it under the bridge, under the interstate, Interstate 40 here in Eastern Tennessee. They've been doing this for over 20 years. And when I was teaching full-time in the PA program, I got hooked up with this group. I heard about them, I reached out to them, and then I started taking PA students on Wednesdays there. So in almost every community, I'm guessing in our country now, there probably are some small groups, whether they're free clinics, whether they are through churches, whether they are some private group, one way or the other. And it's by reaching out to the people who exist and asking for just a sit down lunch or a meeting and find out other names and then reaching out to other people that you will get more and more connections. It's kind of like when I did that global health little conference at AAPA. I never knew anything about tropical medicine or global health until I attended that. And then I talked to a few people. I got some emails. I started following up on that, and one thing leads to another. So no matter what you're interested in, whether it's underserved populations or education or leadership, there are always some people, I think, that are out there. You just have to find them. And I'm sure they would be willing to share their stories as well as help you get to that next level of whatever it is you're trying to do.
Awesome. Thank you.
Great. Well, once again, Mike, thank you for your time today participating in our masterclass. But I'm going to give you the last word before we close the session. Any last minute words?
I just want to thank you guys, Beth and Randy, for inviting me to be here to share my story. I hope that the people who listen to this may be able to get inspired in a few different ways. And again, if there's anything I can ever do to help anyone, my personal email is mnowak, M as in Mike, N as in Nancy, O-W-A-K, my name, mnowak333@yahoo.com. And I will do my best to get back to each and everyone who reaches out to help them in any capacity that I can. I'll type in the chat box in just a second here, our website, and you can see more information about that. And if anyone's ever interested in maybe starting a clinic down the road, I'd be happy to help them there as well.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Okay, well, so for the rest of you, please join us on October 30th at 4 p.m. Arizona time for our next masterclass featuring Colonel Retired Pauline Gross, who served as an Army PA for more than 30 years, completing PA school back in 1984. And after 44 years of total Army service, her story is one that you should not miss. So thank you all for joining us today, and the best to all of you, and have a great evening.